The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. My dear listeners, it is that other magical time of the year where we keep hearing about how so many people have broken their New Year's resolutions. Whether you committed to making changes in the new year, or if you resolved to avoid resolutions altogether, it is important to have purpose, and any time of year is a great time to be motivated to try something new. And today's stories may be just the inspiration we need. We'll learn about the totally feasible, completely realistic, and not at all unwise strategy of going all in, even and maybe especially when we don't know what's going on. We'll get started with New to Tell author Ellen DeGeneres from her book, My Point, and I Do Have One, copyright 1995, the chapter Ellen's New Hobby. Journal entry. I need a hobby. Something to pass my time. A goal I can work toward. I've tried knitting, square dancing, social work. I need to have passion about something. Here I am, sitting at my kitchen table, staring at my pancakes and coffee, feeling the emptiness of a life with no meaning. It's like I'm sitting in a car, but the engine is idling. I'm not even on the road, just off to the side. I see the others swoosh by me. I can recognize the shapes of the cars, but not the direction they're going. I'm alone, all alone, in a car on the side of the road. My dogs are staring at me, trying to give me hope. "You can do it, Ellen," they say. "Get out of the house. Find your path and follow your heart." I want to find it so bad, I do. But all I can do is turn on my TV and watch Regis and Kathy Lee. I can answer those trivia questions. Maybe they'll call me and put a pin in my city. I want a pin. I want to share a hot air popcorn popper with number 35. That's who I would pick. I just saw a flash of a woman with dogs on the screen. She races or something. She used the word Iditarod. I looked it up in the dictionary, but it wasn't there. I was so upset, I started to cry and scream, "Why? Why? Why?" I was pounding on the table with my closed fists. I was filled with anger, raging with fury. I was a wild stallion, rearing up on its hind legs, snorting and whinnying and kicking and... Wait a minute. Hold on just a cotton-picking minute. This is passion I'm feeling. This word, Iditarod, has moved me. I must find out what this Iditarod is and do it. I will Iditarod, and I will win. Journal entry. I am beginning to feel frustrated. It is my fourth week of training for the Iditarod, and I am seeing very little progress, if any at all. The big race is 2 months away, and I worry I won't be ready. I already have one strike against me. My sled barely moves along the concrete-paved roads. Having only two dogs is also not helping. Since I don't believe in hitting, I certainly won't strike my dogs just to make them pull me. So I encourage them strongly. "Please, let's go. Come on." But they come toward me and get in the sled. Seems they're conditioned to come to me when I speak, not away. I've tried dog biscuits, but as I place them down several yards ahead of the dogs, by the time I run back to get in the sled, they've run to get the biscuits without me in it. Also, one of my dogs is rather small, so the times we do move at all, it's in circles. The larger one sets our course off balance. I am sweating so much in these big Eskimo clothes because of the warm California climate. I should warn others to wear a cooler version here. Ah, well, I must not give up. It's a dream. I will race. I can't let the neighborhood children's silly taunts stop me. Let them laugh all they want. I will race in the Iditarod one day. Journal entry. I've given up returning phone calls. I've given up my so-called normal life. I can't be bothered. The race is but a month away. I eat, drink, and sleep Iditarod. I've begun to question aspects of my training. I had heard that carbo loading was good, but now I am not so sure. My dogs have gotten fat and lethargic. I may need to change their diet of spaghetti, potatoes, pound cake, and ice cream. Now when I bring them to the sled, they just roll over and fall asleep. Sometimes, to my eternal shame, I do the same. Perhaps I should quit. No, no, no! I cannot allow a negative thought. My will cannot be broken or bent. I must continue chanting my mantra. I can a rod. I will a rod. I win a rod. I did a rod. I can a rod. I will a rod. I win a rod. I did a rod. I can a rod. I will a rod. I win a rod. I did a rod. If I chant loudly enough, I can barely hear the jeering from the neighborhood children. They are such ignorant Philistines. No matter how many times I correct them, they get it wrong. I scream to deaf, uncaring ears, "It's pronounced Iditarod, not idiot!" I have ended my quest for corporate sponsorship. The only offer came from a place called Uncle Huey's Dry Cleaning and Donut Shop, and only if I wore a vest with their motto, "If you get some jelly donut on your clothes, we'll clean it before you're finished with your second cup of coffee." I have too much pride. I will not look ridiculous. So I turned them down. They can keep their $35. Journal entry. I do worry that I will not be ready in time to race the Iditarod after all. It is only 2 weeks away, and I have made little progress. The dogs sense when we are about to begin training. They watch me get dressed and know that when the big boots come out, we are headed for the sled. It's 87 degrees, unusually hot for this time of year. I have lost 15 pounds just from wearing these big bundly clothes and sitting in my sled, but I must get used to the bulkiness. I have made some progress, though. Last Thursday, Bootsy Muffin and I were out in the street sitting there, same as every morning. We've chosen to go out at 3 o'clock a.m. to avoid both traffic and cruel neighborhood children. Suddenly, Bootsy and Muffin took off with a start that caught me unawares. I had dozed off. I was thrown from the sled, and the dogs ran for a half a mile or so. I caught up to them and encouraged them profusely. "Good doggies," I said. "Good dogs. Two good girls." I'm not sure, but I think they saw a squirrel or something. It's too bad there wasn't another squirrel to get us back home. We walked. I carried the sled. I sure hope we'll be ready. Maybe there are squirrels in Alaska. Journal entry. Well, we're in Alaska, and I'll tell you something. It's cold. It's so cold it's snowing. Looks like it has been for a while. The dogs are not taking to the snow the way I'd hoped they would. Muffin, the smaller one, is being downright stubborn, refusing to step foot or paw in the snow. I can't really blame her. She sinks into it so far, her ears are barely sticking out. I feel we are in trouble with both dogs pulling, and there's no way to try with only Bootsy. Also, Bootsy has, it seems, and this is a terrible thing, just gone into heat. I was debating whether I should neuter her before the race, and then I totally forgot. You can imagine the scene she's causing. I've never seen her act this way. I keep apologizing to all of the other contestants. So far, no one is talking to me. They're kind of snobbish folks, and real serious about this race. I think some are cheating, too. Some have as many as 8 dogs. They must all know each other. All of the dogs look alike and are well-behaved. They look at my dogs a lot, probably very curious about the breed. It's hard to tell what they are with their little sweaters on. Uh-oh, I hear a ruckus outside. Sounds like Bootsy is into some trouble with other dogs. I'll sign off for now. The big day is soon upon us. Journal entry. Anchorage, Alaska, 5 a.m. I haven't been sleeping well. I'm very worried about the race. It starts tomorrow, and since arriving here, I've learned a lot more about this event. For instance, you're supposed to have somewhere between 14 and 20 dogs per sled. Wow, that's crazy. I mean, where do all of these people live that they're allowed to own that many dogs? I know for my own neighborhood, there is a zoning law that prohibits a person from having any more than 3 dogs. Nevertheless, I must adapt to the circumstances and move on. I will go to the local animal shelter today and get more dogs. Since Bootsy and Muffin are somewhat familiar with the routine, I won't need the full 20 dogs. I'll just get 15. A nice 17 will do just fine. I figure these dogs will be so grateful to be adopted, they'll do anything I ask of them. After the race, I'll simply find good, loving homes for them. Journal entry. Uh-oh. I think I'm in trouble. For some reason, the shelter didn't have that many dogs. I got 7. That's all they had. And 8 cats. I was desperate. I see no reason why I can't train the cats to pull. I've seen movies and TV shows where they use cats. For what exactly, I don't remember. Besides, with the 9 dogs total, they should be able to get it going, and once we have momentum, it should be easy pulling for the cats. Well, kittens. They're 10 weeks old. Maybe I'll just keep the kittens in the sled with me. They can't add any weight. I wonder if I can push the sled in addition to the dogs pulling, or at least just run alongside. I've picked up a pamphlet on the race. Hopefully, I will get a little more insight on this Iditarod. Bye for now. Journal entry. Oh, my. Maybe this wasn't such a good idea. I'm afraid I'm not as prepared as I would like to be. My intentions were good, but Bootsy is having a problem with the kitties. I've tried to introduce them slowly so as to avoid the problem we had the first day. I've never seen Bootsy so aggressive. Luckily, I got there in time to stop her violent charges at the poor kitties. I can't imagine why she hates them so. The race started yesterday. I hope I can catch up. It shouldn't be that hard. I've attached a small motor to my sled, which should help matters somewhat. I plan on leaving tonight. Over and out. Journal entry. Things have gotten worse and worse. All the other racers are 2 days ahead of me. I hate them. They are a distasteful group whose juvenile jeering made me yearn for the taunts of my neighborhood children. I dream of wiping the smiles off their smug, pudgy faces. How dare they call me a Sheila Disco Musher? But I fear that my dreams of revenge will just be dreams. The motor on my sled didn't work, probably because it wasn't attached to anything. All it did was make a lot of noise, weigh down the sled, and scare the cats. I must keep my spirits up. Not so much for myself as for my team. I must not give up hope. If we do not feel like winners, we cannot win. To that end, I will head to downtown Anchorage today to get the 3 poodles on my team pedicures. Whenever I ask myself, why go on? I must answer, why not? Miracles do happen. I can a rod. I will a rod. I win a rod. I did a rod. Journal entry. I won. I won! They say I didn't. They say I cheated. They say I've been disqualified. All I know is I finished first. My team and I were the first ones to get from Anchorage to Nome. They can bitch and moan as much as they please. Nowhere in the rules does it say you can't use a Winnebago. It was a stroke of genius and a bit of luck. Who would have guessed that there was an auto dealership across the street from the dog groomer? With a sled and dogs and cats in the back, we just took off down the freeway. We beat the nearest racer by 2 days, and we rarely went over 55 miles an hour, mainly because Muffin gets nauseous if I drive any faster. As for the other Iditarodders, I have never seen such a group of sore losers in my life. But I pity them more than I hate them. They're just jealous. I can't get rid of my posse. That's what I've started calling my team. To hell with the neighborhood rules. I'm keeping them all. Maybe I'll return to defend my title next year. Back to back. Journal entry. Life has no meaning again. I gaze into the abysmal void that is my soul, and all that is reflected back is my own emptiness. I am bored and restless. The high of being the Iditarod champion did not last long. I need a new challenge, but what? My posse, my team, my cats and dogs, they're listless as well. I try to maintain a happy exterior for their sake, but they're not fooled. Once again, I'm watching Regis and Kathy Lee. Even Kathy Lee's stories about Cody failed to cheer me up. Before I turn off the set and do God knows what, I see an image, a boat skating across the sea. A woman mentions the America's Cup, the world's premier yacht race. Yes! I bet there are no rules about having pets as part of your crew. Me and my posse start training tomorrow. Until I get a yacht, we'll just use an inflatable raft in my pool. The dream lives. Our next story proves that you don't even have to glow pop to find out what works, or maybe doesn't work, for you. From the book Laugh Out Loud, 40 Women Humorists Celebrate Then and Now, Before We Forget, by Aaliyah Zobel Nolan, with contributions from the Irma Bombeck Writers Workshop Authors, copyright 2018. The chapter, Sweating Bullets, Hot Yoga, and My Search for Inner Peace, by Pamela Wright. Come on, inner peace, I don't have all day. Sachin Gurg. I greeted the new year with a vow to get my act together. The holiday season had left me depressed and bloated. Perhaps it was the advent of my 45th birthday just before Christmas, or the 2 weeks of overindulgence in carbs and self-pity. I was in serious danger of crossing the line into Zaftig, or even worse, being described as real pretty in the face. So I began with a recommitment to physical fitness. Google revealed an interesting prospect, a hot yoga studio near my home in Atlanta. I knew several yoga devotees, centered, peaceful women who extolled the virtues of meditative breathing and properly aligned chakras, and they could wear skinny jeans with their shirts tucked in above their remarkably perky butts. I arrived early for the Sunday morning session, anticipating a spandex-swaddled nirvana. A petite woman introduced herself as the instructor and suggested my goal should be to simply remain in the room for the entire class. I found that curious, but dismissed it as yoga speak. After I signed an extensive liability waiver, the instructor pointed me toward the studio. As I turned away, she added, "Oh, and we lock the door after class starts." They lock the door? I debated whether I should point out this constituted unlawful restraint, or possibly even kidnapping. The instructor entered the steamy studio and took her place before the mirrored front wall. "It seems we have quite a few first-timers this morning, so the class may run a little long," she announced, with a hint of exasperation. "I'll have to talk you through all 26 poses in more detail than usual." 26 poses? Sweat was already rolling down every surface of my body. As she directed us into the pranayama pose, I noticed the instructor didn't participate. She just barked instructions like a drill sergeant ordering a line of recruits. I laced my hands beneath my chin and raised my elbows above my ears. A guttural din rose around me as we were instructed to open our jaws and produce a hissing, gurgling noise from deep within our tracheas. I tried to follow along, but quickly choked on saliva. The instructor warned me we might become dizzy or feel a pinch in our shoulder. Aren't those symptoms of a heart attack? The eagle pose involved intertwining the forearms and hands and coiling the legs together like stripes on a candy cane, all while balancing on one foot. My sweaty hands disentangled with such force that my knuckles smacked me in the face, and I pitched over into the formidably muscled woman beside me. "Sorry," I whispered. "No talking during class," the instructor bellowed. I snapped to attention and struggled to execute the poses, all of which defied basic principles of human anatomy. They also defied the elastic in my yoga pants. With every stance, I felt the waistband creep down my hips, lower and lower. I feared the next move would send my pants rolling south, allowing the holiday-softened flesh within to erupt like a bested can of biscuits. The temperature rose with each interminable minute. I was panting like a dog, but felt encouraged when I saw others who were also experiencing difficulty. It began quietly, with the faintest hee-yush, hee-yush, emanating from the far corners of the room. It sounded like I was trapped inside the world's largest iron lung. We were on our stomachs, with limbs stretched upward behind us. As I attempted to grasp my sweat-slicked ankles, the woman behind me intoned, "Ooh-wee! Ooh-wee!" from between her bared teeth, like some kind of new-age hog caller. A middle-aged man behind her seemed to be speaking in tongues, crying, "Ay-yee-o-ma-na-ma-o!" It all melded into a cacophony, more hellish than the Metallica concert I attended in 1987, while high on peach schnapps and Lebanese hash. Later, we were instructed to reach through and behind the legs until our heads were nearly up our own behinds. My head only made it to about knee level. I watched sweat stains creep southward from my crotch to commingle into a pattern reminiscent of a Rorschach ink blot. I hung there, trying to decide if it looked more like a flock of sheep or Teddy Roosevelt on horseback, until I began to lose consciousness. I returned to a standing position, gasping as if in the throes of childbirth. Just as I began to consider crawling beneath my mat to await the sweet relief of asphyxia, the instructor announced the class was over. She recommended we lie quietly for another 15 to 20 minutes. I considered that advice for about a millisecond before leaping up like LeBron James and spanning the 40-odd feet between myself and the door in one step. The locked door didn't discourage me one bit. I was prepared to hurl myself against it, like a TV cop, until it broke free from its hinges, or my shoulder broke free from my body. My bravado would never be tested. The door sprang open at the lightest touch, sending me sprawling onto the floor on the other side. I laid there on the cool tiles as the other students filed out. The instructor was the last to exit, and I rose up on my elbows as she passed. "Didn't you say y'all lock the door once class starts?" I asked. She stopped and stood over me with her hands on her hips. "Yes," she said. "We lock the front door. We've had some thefts recently." She knitted her eyebrows. "You didn't think I meant we locked you in there, did you? That would be illegal," she said, and walked off. However much I envied my yogi friends, this class was not for me. I knew the closest I would ever come to reaching nirvana was digging out my old Kurt Cobain mixtapes. Although the morning had fallen short of my expectations, I remained undeterred in my search for an activity to lift both spirit and booty. "Maybe I'll try water aerobics next," I thought to myself. "My neighbor loves it, and she's in great shape. She doesn't look a day over 79. And now I leave you with a few inspirational quotes found on the Reader's Digest websites rd.com and thehealthy.com. Seize the moment. Remember all those women on the Titanic who waved off the dessert cart. Irma Bombeck. Confidence is 10% hard work and 90% delusion. Tina Fey. People often say that motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing. That's why we recommend it daily. Zig Ziglar. You can't wait for inspiration. You have to go after it with a club. Jack London. The difference between try and triumph is just a little oomph. Marvin Phillips. And from Kurt Vonnegut, to be is to do. Socrates. To do is to be. Jean-Paul Sartre. Do be, do be do. Frank Sinatra. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any humorous quotes or authors you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number, one more time, is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.